Ooh, it feels weird to be back. I don't know, like.
I know. I feel like we, like, it's like a groove that we maybe don't have right now. Just to call us out.
Yeah, so welcome to season two of Influx. We're a culture catch-up between two second-gen kids. I'm Emreen, an Indian-Canadian filmmaker that's finding her footing in the independent scene right now. And who are you, Kyle?
Oh, who am I? I'm Kyle. I'm a second-gen Filipino-Canadian. I'm a digital storyteller that does a lot of things in visual mediums right now. I'm starting to draw.
You got vaccinated? Tell me about that.
I got vaccinated yesterday on my birthday. I lined up for the Ticketmaster adjacent pop-up, but I also like have my heart out for everybody else who needs to get this life-saving fucking thing soon. I messaged you, I think a day before your final exam, being like, I need to talk to you ASAP about Kim's Convenience. And you were probably like, fuck you, Kyle.
I honestly was at that moment because I was so overwhelmed, but how were you feeling at that time?
I had been feeling an incredible loss about just the sense of like, whose Toronto is this anyways? I think it was the day of that, like, it was announced that two vaccination clinics in Scarborough were closing up. And it was also after like a lockdown announcement that essentially reintroduced carding in Ontario. That has since been kind of taken away. And linked to that is also the loss of this like one television show that had just had its last episode. So let's talk about Kim's Convenience. Kim's Convenience was originally a play written by Innes Choi that premiered in the Fringe Festival of 2011.
There were 10 slots. Most of them were sold out and ended in standing ovations.
So the show was picked up by Soul Pepper Theatre in Toronto, and it had its run for about 5 years until it got picked up by the CBC and turned into a sitcom.
And had a 5-season run. So the show's about a South Korean immigrant family that lives in Toronto and owns a convenience store downtown. The family is made up of four: Appa, Amma, Janet, and Jung. And like many other immigrants, they come here with the hopes of creating a better life for their kids.
I read this play in high school in the middle of like an Indigo at the Toronto Eaton Centre, and it's one of those plays that really speaks to the intersectionality of what it means to be first a second gen kid and also to be a parent of someone who does not have the same cultural touch points and access points as you do. Which I think is really beautiful.
I love that we also get to see the parents. I think a lot of the times the focus is on us, like the kids of the immigrants that came here and like how hard it is for us. And we don't always see like what's difficult for them or humanize their kind of experiences.
Yeah, usually like it's strange to like have the empathy with either Janet or Jung and then also see the other side where it's like, why are you being such a kid? Why are you being so annoying to your parent? Your parent was just asking where you're going. Your parent was just asking like how much money was left in the till, all these different things. It's such a cherished part of the show for me.
Yeah, I was like, holy shit, there's so many things in the show that I forgot aren't in TV. And a lot of that doesn't just have to do with Asian representation, but it has to do with being seen as Canadian and Torontonians and also having our city seen. So when you're talking about like that great loss that losing the show has, it's also linked to being seen not just as Asian, but also Torontonians.
In our conversation leading up to this, you also brought up the fact that, you know, a lot of times in Canadian film and television, we see like this focus on rural areas. And there are a few exceptions in this, in what I'm about to say, but rural areas usually also means white bodies. And that's not to negate like intersections of class and queerness. But that's also to say that there's a gap in who we expect to see out of Canadians in Canadian media.
Yeah, I think with a lot of Canadian content, there's this grappling with like what is Canadian identity? And that can be seen through like all of our content, including music and our media, because like our immediate pulls are also American content, even though so many great creators in the US are Canadians. But yeah, when I think of Canadian film that I like and Canadian content that like I learn about in school and like that I see at TIFF, a lot of it is, yeah, rural Canadian stuff. A lot of stuff about the opioid crisis, which is great. But also, yeah, it is white. So we don't see a lot of the city representation in Quebec content. Toronto and like our city is kind of shaded by like Xavier Dolan, even though we love him.
Yeah, that's a little tidbit from us. We love Xavier Dolan. This would have been an episode on Xavier Dolan, but that got scrapped in the brainstorming process. Anyway, sorry, continue.
Yeah. And yeah, so we see like a lot of discrepancies even with the filmmakers getting grants from like Telefilm Canada and stuff. And like, even with CBC, even though they're behind the show, they've had been called out for racism in multiple areas. And a lot of it is like subtle and less overt, but more systemic, making it harder to call out. But that's a whole other thing that we always talk about. But yeah, I want to see more stuff that's made by people from the city that are diverse, that look like us, and Kim's Convenience was that. And according to NPR, it's actually our country's first show to have an all-Asian-led cast.
I have so many more things that I want to talk about with you about the show, but I need to ask this very important question, which is, what character do you think you are in Kim's Convenience, and why is it Janet?
I'm dead. Yeah, it is definitely Janet. And I think it's because art student, firstly, I really relate to like how her mom reacts to her art a lot. Both her parents react. And sometimes they like, yeah, I feel totally okay like overtly bashing it, but they still let her do it. And I think that is like something I never see. You know, you never see like the quote unquote strict Asian parents letting their kid do art, or like, you know, she goes to OCAD. Like, that's wild.
Yeah, her parents paid for her to go to OCAD and waste her money on a degree that wouldn't get her a job right after. It's Janet for me. And here's the reason why. It's absolutely all of those things. It's that relationship that she has to choosing art making as a form of storytelling. But also, I think it's because she's the one who stubbornly fights back against her parents the most. Mm. We have a very interesting relationship between Janet and Jung, where like Jung like had really intense fights with his parents, got abandoned by them, and had to start up his own life. And you have Janet, who was left behind, who, you know, might have various fights with her parents, but ultimately sticks around and has to cope with a lot of the burden of being overly parented. You know, Janet is learning to feel autonomy in her relationship to her parents as someone who is a 20-year-old trying to grow up while still living with them and still while working with them. And so you see these like shreds of Janet where she's trying to assert her own identity in front of her parents. And half the time it doesn't work out, but half the time she does change their opinion, which I think is really nice.
Yeah, I pretty directly relate to that too. Cause like, even if it's not working right away, even though it takes like a bit more vouching for herself, she still keeps fighting back.
It creates this relationship to finding empathy across generations and across cultures, not just in the sense of this one family, but also their presence as this family in a convenience store in Regent Park, which is one of those quote unquote mixed income spaces in Toronto, aka a low income area that got excessively gentrified, with many types of people living there. And I think that's why Kim's Convenience is so exciting. It's because, back to that question of like, when we think of whose Canada do we live in, that resembles our version of what Canada looks like.
Yeah, I love the customers. So it's not, you know, it's just not just the family and them as the shop owners, but the kind of people we see come in and the dialogue that comes from that when they're of different races or different sexual orientations. Like the first episode is about Pride Week.
Gay Discount is what it's called. It's an incredible pilot. So you all need to watch it if you've not seen Kim's Convenience yet. But what stuck out to you about that first episode?
I think it's because we get to see the parent side of the situation. Like, it's easy to jump to the conclusion that people are homophobic when it's a really more nuanced conversation. Like, we see some community members have empathy and understanding for Appa and for where he comes from in his, like, generation of being raised under more conservative values. But that doesn't mean he's not trying. And so we kind of see him, like, overcome some things and make a few more mistakes, but rather than villainizing him, they see that there is a lack of understanding, and sometimes that lack of understanding can cause unintentional harm. And we see some of these customers also return in future episodes, and that's really great to see because that's a reality.
Yes, I think that there's a lot of conversations about, like, what it means to, like, live amongst, like, a melting pot in Toronto. And a lot of the times, like, we think about them in, like, these, like, forms of, like, theory where it's, like, you know, it's all about calling in, it's all about, like, reaching the gaps and creating empathy. But Kim's Convenience does this really wonderful thing where it's, like, you just see the realities of what it means to, like, live amongst many different types of people looks like. There are so many gaps in understanding, and there's so many times where we trip up on, like, things that we say or, like, things that we shouldn't say, but at the end of the day, we're still there.
Yeah, it shows that we're not all perfect, even though we want to seem like we have this space and this city where everything's magical and we all accept each other just because, like, we all come to this place for that. Like, does it mean it's perfect? And we have these discussions, but the beauty of that is that we allow each other to grow.
I love that. Like, you can tell it's a play because that's one of the meanings behind what this store is. It's a foundation. It's a meeting space. It's where people can meet across differences. And also what people need to go to a convenience store because they need to pick up the things that they need to survive. And alongside that, you might get an interesting conversation that picks your brain, or a conversation of difference that makes you leave with, like, more questions than answers. And I also think, like, on that other, like, meaning scale, it represents, like, what Amma and Appa have built for their children. It represents, like, a piece of capital and a piece of, like, future building for as a foundation for the success that they hope for their kids.
The reason why the cancellation of Kim's Convenience is so devastating for me is because it's just a regular sitcom and the characters happen to be immigrants.
It showed me what an Asian household can look like, and a lot of it was really spot on, coming from a household where my father was Asian and I have a lot of Asian friends. It was something I could really relate to and resonate with.
And I feel like, you know, the sitcoms that I had growing up, those stories are centered around regular, schmegular people, but they always happen to be white.
It also shed a light on what it's like to be Canadian. There was a lot of other minorities in the show, and the way that they depicted life in Toronto, it felt really welcoming. And
I think it totally could have had potential in the Canadian media industry the way Schitt's Creek did.
We don't know when another show like that's going to come around, and it really, really sucks for the community. I'm heartbroken, and I believe that the show had so much more to offer.
You can see the power in the show in the way that people choose to be involved. And we've just heard from a couple of friends about their personal relationships to Kim's Convenience. We've kind of given you, like, our heart and soul about why it matters to us. And that kind of energy has also showed up on the internet and by people with huge platforms as well.
Including Justin Trudeau and the hashtag Seek More and Save Kim's Convenience trending. So what went down in the cancellation?
Essentially, Kim's Convenience at the end of season 5 got renewed for 2 more seasons. Kevin White and Innes Choi, who were executive producers on the show, had said that they dropped out. And so this left the actors in the predicament of either sourcing, like, a new production team, including, like, a new creative team to continue with the show, or to cancel it.
Which is essentially unheard of. So it was ultimately them pulling out that resulted in the end of the show.
At first, when I figured out Kim's Convenience was being canceled, I was like, who is the white producer that I need to blame at the CBC? Who do I direct my anger to? And I know it's a white person who pulled it out. I know it's a white person who pulled the trigger. And the reality was, it wasn't. And that produced a really strange sensation in me, which is, who are we to blame? And I don't know. I don't know who.
It's strange because it plays into our whole inability to say goodbye, which has been like a theme of COVID. We've seen the cancellation of other shows, including like High Fidelity, which we were upset about. And I don't know, like, is COVID the excuse? Is there stuff happening in their personal life? It's hard to tell, really.
Yeah, I kind of go back and revert back to like our conversation of Mindy Kaling, where we talk about the burden of representation, because I think that the article had framed it in this way, but I also think that it might have played a big place in it, where it's like Kim's Convenience turned into almost this like Canadian media legacy piece. Mm-hmm. And so in order to keep going, it might have led to burnout, where, you know, the objectives of the two producers, Innes Choi and Kevin White, might have already run its course or was no longer en route to complete the course it originally set out to do. And so there's all these various creative problems. And I think initially, like, I was trying to grapple with, like, well, how could you let this go? And then I realized, is that really where I need to direct my attention to?
I think what's interesting is that, like, at the end of the day, they still found a reason to blame Asian creators. I don't think Innes Choi had to stay. And I don't think that's kind of, like, the main issue here. I think they came at this situation with, like, a white guilt perspective of, like, oh, shit, we can't be, like, white people running the show anymore because the optics of that look bad. And that allowed them to kind of, like, cop out from continuing the show when really they had two options. They had the option of bringing on an experienced producer that might not be Asian but could be a different race, or they could have brought on an Asian producer, and that Asian producer they could have nurtured even if they aren't the most experienced. Because isn't that like the problem with the industry? The fact that we don't nurture Asian creatives, but we nurture white ones. I don't know. I feel like it came off as like a cop-out, like optics kind of situation of like, oh, we can't do this because like we're white.
I love you. Period. you brought up something that I wasn't expecting and something that I didn't necessarily even think to look at. But you, I think the underlying thing here is that I've noticed is that you point to the idea that cultural products are linked to capital products. These are TV shows that require networks of laborers and require money. And the mechanics of that money often is white, and the mechanics of that labor is something new for Asian people in storytelling. And I think my question here for you is, are you pointing to the fact that the CBC and the Kim's Convenience team didn't trust an up-and-coming Asian creative to take on this producing role? Or are you pointing to the fact that a white person who already had the credentials could have taken over as well? And left a lot of the duties around storytelling to the Asian cast, or both?
I think both. I think the thing with white people is they always like find the wrong way to kind of do something. So like, oh no, I can't work on this show anymore because it's just going to be white producers. I can't help an Asian person that wants to produce. I can't help anyone. I can't help the Asian community by keeping the show on. But what I can do is recognize my place here. And I can say, oh, but I'm not Asian, so I shouldn't do this show anymore. Even though the call to action from the Asian community about this show was keep it going. What about the Asian people in the rest of your show? Don't they have a say? What about, you know, like, what about them? What about the actors? Like, they're there.
Are you saying that they chose Convenience, but they didn't choose Kim's?
That is exactly what I'm saying. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think like, oh, fuck, you really threw me a screwball here, where I think to your point, yes, because I also take the other side of that. Like, you know, when the creative lead of a particular project leaves a show looks different. And I think we've seen that in examples. I'm going to throw Community into the mix here, where the creative producer, Dan Harmon, left the show and that season was a mess. But I think what you're sharing here is that there were people who were willing on the creative team of Kim's Convenience to take on that torch and to continue to tell the story in a meaningful way, in a way that honored the play and honored the product. And it's hurtful to think that that was a missed step, because instead of choosing to continue to the show, people, and we're assuming white people here, just dropped the ball in terms of accountability. They said, this is not my problem.
Yeah, at the end of the day, they weren't willing to take a chance with the fear that they might lose money, like you mentioned a lot of other shows have. But it sucks that it always comes down to that. It's kind of just the inability to take a chance on something when they might have done that for another show.
I think I come in from a different perspective here, where at first I really wanted to blame Innis Troy, where I thought, you know, how could you turn your back on a creative project? And I think about all the creative projects that I turn my back on, and I'm like, LOL, yeah, I do that all the freaking time. And so it's weird, but like I almost displaced the blame from him, because I understand that he birthed this product that had done so much good and then perhaps just couldn't keep up with it. I think I feel settled. I don't know if it's strange, but I don't feel angry as much about the cancellation of Kim's Convenience as I do feel challenged for, I feel like this, the gap of Kim's Convenience has produced a challenge to us as audience members to seek more representation, us as creators to pitch more projects that align with our vision of what is a Canadian story, and a challenge to producers to acknowledge that this is a wide gap that the loss of Kim's Convenience has produced, and to do something about it. Because yes, okay, so Kim's Convenience might be over, but what can we do to make sure that the thing that fills its space is meaningful?
Yeah, it kind of doesn't let us take the easy way out either. And I think none of this is to negate like the kind of shows that have come in the Canadian past, like How to Be Indie. But it's all about like how long do these shows last, and, you know, like who's going to keep them afloat? I think a great show right now that does a lot of what Kim's Convenience does is Rami by A24. And they kind of also have the parents' perspective, where they even have like individual episodes for the parents that are much more interesting, I think. But yeah, like we just need more. And I think it always goes back to that. We just need more. And losing one feels like losing a lot, because there aren't that many shows like this.
Yes. And I think I'm going to take a sidestep here to acknowledge that, like, I'm saying that, like, as a viewer, as someone who's not participated in the making of the show, I'm trying my best to find a calm about this and seek, like, what the next thing is. But I also need to acknowledge here, too, that, like, that's a big blow to the production team and to the actors and the cast that were on the show. And especially, like, the actor that played Appa and Amma had been there since the play, since the iteration, working almost alongside to craft these characters. To have done a full season without knowing it would be your last, and then have the creator who you might be close with drop the ball and say this is no longer happening, is awful. That's just awful. And I think, to the point of like linking this piece to like the capital realities of this, like, where are the makers going to go? Who are these people with these portfolios that are centered around like the experience of like immigrants and Asian Canadians supposed to go next?
Yeah, I agree. I think the responses were quite heartbreaking, both from the cast and the fans. And I think in both areas, you can kind of see like the fear of like, what's next? Like, what's going to happen? Like, what are we going to watch? Like, what are we going to act in? And that's hard. That's really hard. But what are the things that are coming out of Kim's Convenience?
Simu is going to be like the next Marvel superhero. Andrew Fung, who plays Kim Chi, is going to be on, was working on a new show called Run the Burbs, which is going to be on the CBC. And there's going to be a spinoff that's centered on Shannon as she moves to Hamilton, called Strays, in production as well. We can talk about how they chose the white character from the show and didn't choose our fave Janet to do a sequel on. But I think I just want to end on an ode to this powerful show, because I watched the season finale last night, and I kind of, in thinking about all the news around it, had an inkling that they must have written kind of an ending in this. And there's this one beautiful moment where Appa and Umma are surrounded by the characters of the show, their two children, Kim Chi and Shannon, who is Jung's girlfriend, and they just say a prayer about how happy they are to be around each other, how much work they put into the store as two immigrants from Korea. And then they go down to the store and everybody leaves, and they say this really beautiful line that ends the show, which is, nobody fought tonight. Nobody fought tonight.
Wow.
And that's how we end Kim's Convenience, which I think, I have this inclination that they knew, but I think it just speaks to the power of this narrative to share, you know, people who come from different places, a family that comes and reckons with each other after experiencing transgressions with each other, but ultimately just want to show up and show care in the way that they can. Mm-hmm. And for some of those moments, it pays off. So we're going to remember Kim's Convenience. This is one of those moments of, I think, history in our lifetimes that we're going to have to look at as creators. And so, Amreen, I'm staring you right in the face being like, okay, what are you going to make next? Not looking at myself in the same glance as well. But that's a challenge.
That is the challenge, yeah. As audience members and creators, I think, like I'll always remember Kim's Convenience as, like, I don't know, the show that, like, echoed, like, very specific experiences, you know, like a mom bringing food to her kid, even though her kid is fully grown and moved out. That's something my mom did. I think I'll never not be surprised to hear, like, cultural touch points of Toronto, like Alibaba's and, you know, like small things like that, like seeing OCAD or seeing, I don't know, like streets that we frequent. That'll always stick around, and cancellation doesn't mean cancellation of culture. It doesn't mean cancellation of visibility. It can mean so much more, and it'll be really cool to see what everyone from the show does next, and I'm looking forward to it.
We have 10 more minutes left on my free Zoom plan. And what can folks expect next from Inflex Season 2?
What can they expect? One episode a week every Monday. But what's our next episode about?
We are ready to tackle the world of Instagram slideshows, the rise of cancel culture, and also like the soft cancellations we make against each other when we don't share that one post on our Instagram story.
Wait, what post? What post do I need to share?
All right, so welcome to this next season. We are so happy, I think, and we're so happy for your love. We're also so happy for your critiques. And you can follow us because we now have an Instagram account at InfluxThePod. But where can people find you, Amreen?
I'm at AmreenK_ on Instagram and Twitter.
And I'm at FragileKyle on both Twitter and Instagram. And you could add me on LinkedIn if you found me. That's also there. Our intro music and music all throughout is by one of our besties, Nadam. You can follow him on Instagram at BoyGarcon.
And our cover art is by Andrew O'Brien. You can find him at Hooker_Green on Instagram.
And now, we're all caught up.
We did it, Joe.
We did it, Joe. Joe, we did it.